This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. One or many? That's today's question in our month-long series on civil rights. At certain points in time, one person, like Martin Luther King Jr., has come to symbolize the entire civil rights movement. But there have always been many voices and many factions, some of them competing. Who is in charge now? The Reverends Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are often seen today in front of marches and news cameras, but are they as powerful or relevant as their predecessors? Are many African Americans looking for one standout leader to shape the civil rights debate, or have expectations moved so that group leadership is ideal? Joining me now, Eddie Glaude Jr. He's professor of religious studies at Princeton University. He's also the author of In a Shade of Blue, Pragmatism and the Politics of Black America. We're also joined by Oakland-based organizer Ludovic Blaine. He directs Equal Voice for America's Families. It works to get issues facing low-income families into policy debates. And Sophia Bracey Harris. She's co-founder and executive director of the Federation of Child Care Centers of Alabama. She's also the Alabama director of the Southern Rural Black Women's Initiative. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
So,
thank you.
I'm going to go to you, Eddie. When we look back at the height of the civil rights movement, we see singular black leaders. They were mostly but not entirely men. And people like Reverend King and Malcolm X were excellent speakers and organizers, also controversial, ultimately assassinated. So has that traditional model of leadership gone away, or is it still present in some form?
Well, I think it's still present precisely because I think there are certain assumptions about how we ought to view black folk. That is to say, when there's a standard assumption that you can think about black folk as a homogeneous blob, that we're not differentiated, the assumption then is that you can actually go to one black person and ask them, what do black people think? And if you think you can go to one black person and ask them, what do you think other black people think, then you think there could be one black leader. So as long as there's a sense in which their perceptions on the part of mainstream white America, their perceptions on the part of other black folk, that we're this undifferentiated group, that just because we're black, we're the same, then there we will always have this kind of, I think, misconception and very dangerous notion that there is this one leader who can lead us to the promised land.
It sounds like you think this is not necessarily a good thing to have one leader, but if there was kind of an American idol for civil rights leader, who would be the winner, the audience choice?
Well, I wouldn't participate. I wouldn't vote. You know, because one of the things I want to do is I want to move away from a conception of leadership, a model of leadership that has at its root this kind of charisma. I mean, we always need charismatic leaders. But this notion of a charismatic leader who can, by virtue of his or her power, stand and dictate and define the agenda for black folk. What I'm more interested in, Sister Farai, is this democratic model of leadership. I had the privilege to participate in the Covenant with Black America, and I went all over the country having town hall meetings with Tavis Smiley, where everyday ordinary folk came in on the basis of a book. And we sat down and we talked about how do we respond and how do we mobilize everyday ordinary people to believe that they're the leader that they're looking for. Not someone else, but they are. And of course, when you start thinking about black folk as intelligent, critical decision makers, folk who, shall we say, make their living being the leader, they tend to get scared. So I don't want to participate in that idol thing, you know.
Sophia, you have a very specific, very in some ways inspiring history. You were in the South. You and your sister integrated your local high school. Your house was firebombed. How do you remember that time in terms of leadership, and how would you compare it to today?
Well, in thinking about that time, certainly there were leaders at various levels that inspired us, and Martin Luther King was certainly one of those. And I think there is a role for a leader that can help to bring a sense of inspiration, motivation, and lift up the greater good. And that was very helpful to us at a time when we were certainly, you know, surrounded by danger and not sure whether we were going to get through, you know, the next day alive. I do believe it is important, however, that we recognize the comments that were made, you know, just, you know, before my statements, that that we are very different, and it really, and particularly today, it requires all kind of leaders to really ignite and touch our hearts. And I really think that, in part, that was true during the Civil Rights Movement. We had I think Martin Luther King emerged as a leader of that movement. But as I remember, there were all kind of leaders that I connected with, and particularly as a young person, our youth leaders during that time were very powerful in helping me to see where I fit in this, you know, in this larger movement.
Ludovic, you work with a lot of different people in coalition. We have talked about in this series already about the difficulties of coalition building. Can you have a civil rights movement that is built around coalitions when people may not even agree then on what the movement is?
Coalitions are tough, and we all have that experience. It's hard to figure out what to order for dinner when you're out with your friends. So the challenge of getting people around the country to figure out some shared agenda is a challenge. At the same time, that's a piece of what we need. We certainly need charismatic leaders to galvanize people. We also need people who are doing the real world work on the ground, talking to individuals one by one, getting a sense of what people's needs, desires, values, and principles are. So collaborative and coalition work is a challenge, but it's a necessary challenge. And that's something that I think the variety of work being done, whether it's Tavis and the work on the State of the Black Union, groups like what Maren Wright Edelman does in Children's Defense Fund, and the campaign that I run, Equal Voice for America's Families, there's a variety of different campaigns out there and organizations that are working to be vehicles to allow people to work together, build relationships, build constituencies, and build shared agendas.
Well, what's the worst moment you've had, or one of the most difficult moments you've had, where you've had two people or two groups who both mean well but just can't get along?
The list is so long, I don't know that I can think of a specific one, but it's always a challenge for people to be present in the moment with the people who are in front of them. And again, that's something that's no different for those of us that are paid to do this work and the people who are listening now who are interested or already engaged in this. We all have challenges for being present. So the thoughts that I have around those particular times were when people were acting out things that were not relevant to that time. But that's something that's not limited to social justice work, you know, that also happens when I'm out at the stadium watching football with my friends.
Ludovic and then Sophia, who's even in the running for black leader, which is a term that I think all of us or most of us can agree is kind of ridiculous. But nonetheless, there is this space, as Eddie mentioned, for a black leader, at least from the outside. Ludovic, who's in at least the running?
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with my fellow guests, and I don't know that I would vote in that American Idol or African American Idol contest. I think it depends on what the audience is. Some folks are very engaged with Tavis. Millions of people listen to Common and Queen Latifah. Many people are looking at Maren Wright Edelman and Angela Davis. Folks in Alabama and around the South know Sophia, who's a fellow panelist. People around the country are doing great work, and each of those leaders has a constituency that they are strongly engaged with. So I think the question of national leadership is partially the individuals and individuals who have national leadership, and partially the accumulation of the leaders across the country who are local leaders doing great work.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know, Sophia, you have to answer the question, but I think part of the challenge is not so much who will emerge as the black leader, Sister Farai. What I think is the challenge involves who among us, and it's not just one person, who will begin to innovate and create and be imaginative in public. That is to say, we need a political language to reflect the specific circumstances of Black America today. I think we're stuck in a moment where our descriptions seem to not quite fit with the realities of people on the ground. And so what we need is not so much someone vying for the next HNIC, but what we need are everyday ordinary folk and others to try to come up with the language that will speak to our moment, that will galvanize and inspire. And I think that's really the challenge right there.
Sophia, stay with me for one moment. I just want to make sure that everybody knows, if you're tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We are talking about one leader versus many, different concepts for civil rights. Talking to Sophia Bracy Harris, co-founder and executive director of the Federation of Child Care Centers in Alabama. Also, Ludovic Blaine, Oakland-based organizer, and Eddie Glaude, Jr., professor of religious studies at Princeton University. So, Sophia, a couple things. One, I haven't heard Reverend Sharpton or Reverend Jackson mentioned. Is that for a reason, I think, in this conversation? Or is it that you want to focus, as our other two guests have, on the people who are working on a grassroots level?
I certainly think that it's important to focus on people working on the grassroots level. At the same time, I do think that we often hear Reverend Jackson and Reverend Sharpton mention, or certainly we see them as media will definitely zero in and spotlight the work that the work that they are doing in their leadership. And I think that's important. It's important that these two people are leaders in their own right, and certainly they bring voice to causes that often people would ask, where are the Black leaders if they, you know, if they did not. At the same time, I would say that it's so very important, and I believe Ludovic and both Eddie has said that, it's so very important that we focus on the leaders that are connecting to the people, the leaders that will cause the people to take up the call to action.
Sophia, what about women? You're part of the Southern Rural Black Women's Initiative. Have women gotten their props, and who can you point to as some of the women who are active in today's civil rights movement or movements for justice?
Well, the question was asked, you know, recently of me, what happened, you know, to the civil rights movement in the past 40 years, and I said to them, you know, again, that movement hasn't gone away. It has continued. There were women who organized the organization that I've worked with these past 35 years, and they were very much a part of the civil rights movement. Marion Wright Elderman was very much a part of the organization of the work in the South, where women were organizing around children, Head Start, child care. They were organizing around children. They were very much a part of the civil rights movement. They were very much a part of doing the work that often was the background, in the background. And those women are still out there working. Evelyn K. Moore, you know, the National Black Child Development Institute. There are women who have continued this work. And I believe as we look at building leadership for the issues that we find ourselves addressing today, it's going to be continue to be women, you know, for the most part, who are taking young women as we are to Tougaloo College each summer for a UNITA Blackwell Institute, 85 young women from three states, and helping to connect them to their history, helping them to connect themselves to what they want for their future and the needs in their community. And I believe that the role that women have played, continues to play, is vital to our being able to sustain a base of people that can bring about change in our country.
Eddie, mm-hmm. has there been a moment where one of the reasons that we don't have a Black leader, and again, I use that term with a caveat, is because there's no color line. The color line affected you if you were rich or poor, no matter where you lived. Today, arguably, there are people who are African American who lead lives not without racism, but without the onslaught of it, either poverty or insults or harassment. Does that undermine the idea that there will be leadership?
Well, it certainly demands that we, in some ways, innovate and question traditional models of leadership that emerge out of the 60s movement. What do I mean by that? I mean, part of your question, Sister Farai, involves what does it mean for us to think about leadership in the context of the civil rights movement turning into the civil rights establishment? What does it mean for us to think about leadership in the context of civil rights efforts to, you know, pass legislation, moving from that grassroots movement to efforts to secure those gains? What does it mean for the NAACP now to have a CEO? What does it mean for business culture to enter into these organizations that were once grassroots that now many of them have become lobbying organizations or simply the left wing of the Democratic Party? So part of this has to do with the natural evolution of any process of struggle. And what we have to do is not think that just because, I mean, I like to say this all the time as I travel around the country, that the 60s generation was the greatest generation America has ever seen. And part of our challenge is to try to speak to our moment in the shadows of the 60s. Some of us I wasn't born at the time of the struggle, right? I didn't come of age politically until the age of Reagan. And so I didn't have the blessing to walk with Martin. I didn't have the privilege to stand post for Malcolm or to serve breakfast with the Panther Party or to do any of the stuff that really marks that moment. But what's so striking to me is that as we are called to imagine a politics that's specific to us, we have folk who came of age in the 60s who refused to let us imagine and innovate. They're stuck. And so when I hear all the time, whether it's Reverend Jackson or Reverend Sharpton invoking Selma, this reminds me of this, this reminds me of that, I just simply say, you're shutting down. This is not the spirit of Ella Baker. This is not the spirit of Bob Moses. This is not that democratic model of leadership which cultivates everyday ordinary folk to speak for themselves.
Well, Eddie, we're going to have to end it right there.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's been great. Thank you all. Eddie Glaude, Jr., professor of religious studies at Princeton University. He joined us from the studios at Princeton. Ludovic Blaine, director of Equal Voice for America's Families, based in Oakland, California, coming from the University of California, Berkeley, and Sophia Bracey Harris, Executive Director of the Federation of Child Care Centers in Alabama, and she is also Alabama Director of the Southern Rural Black Women's Initiative. Next on News and Notes, we've got the best sports bloggers roundtable, period, and your letters.